Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
We, the individual voters, have to do something different. We have to hold those we elected accountable.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, you're absolutely right, Bill Rock. It's a Friday here on the John Gambling Show. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is indeed here in Studio 4. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Welcome aboard.
Warm.
To say the least.
That is the key. Now, you're going to say, Mike, do you have anything to tell the public about surviving through very hot weather, for example, when the temperatures are supposed to climb into the 90s for the next
Seriously,
few
though, there is the heat warning that's in effect
noon to six tomorrow.
You
have to exercise some common sense. When you're outside, you got to drink a lot of water. Even if you don't feel thirsty, you got to drink a lot of water. Light, flimsy clothing makes a lot of difference. Stay out of the sun. You know, don't go running at noon. You can run early in the morning, late in the evening. That makes a little more sense. Fire hydrants. People open fire hydrants. You can go to your firehouse. You can get a spray cap, which goes on. That limits the amount of water. The trouble is when you just open the hydrant, when the fire department shows up to put out a fire down the street, there may not be enough water pressure, and people can die because of it. It's also a good time to check in on elderly and infirmed. You know, just ring the doorbell and say, just wanted to make sure you're okay. Older people don't sometimes realize that they're getting dehydrated. And don't leave your pets in the car, you know, that kind of stuff. Don't use your air conditioner in rooms you're not in or when you're not home, because we're going to have, you know, just not enough power to go around all the time. So the last thing is, if you think you're getting in trouble, just pick up the phone, 911. An ambulance can take you to someplace. If you want to go to a cooling center, 311. We have lots of them throughout the city. The pools are open. You know, 311 or nyc.gov can tell you all this. And don't go in the water without lifeguards. It's happened already this year. No matter how many times you tell people, everybody thinks they're stronger than nature, and you're not.
No, not in the ocean. I can attest to that.
Right, and particularly, you know, you had another big storm in the middle of the Atlantic. That creates bigger riptides, and the waves can look like they're not very high, but there's a big tide can take you out, knock you out, how strong a swimmer you are. You get way out there, and it keeps taking you out, and you just can't get back. So you need a lifeguard to save you. Lifeguard's not on duty. No, it isn't worth it.
You mentioned the power situation with the heat. We will again obviously get into possibly a strained situation. We did last summer, and there was a report that Con Ed has come up with an agreement to pay the folks out in Queens $350. I mean, I don't know if that's the right number.
I don't know either. I mean, most people, it was very inconvenient. It was potentially dangerous. Some people die every time you have very hot weather. I keep getting in trouble for defending Con Ed, so let me do it one more time. If you look at the numbers, it's a very good utility.
Nobody says you'll run away from getting in trouble, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, come on. I mean, they try. You know, there's 12,000 people that work for Con Ed, as I remember, and everyone I've ever talked to, you know, I sometimes go up when they're digging up the streets, much to your annoyance, and stuck in traffic and walking by, and then chit-chat with them. Tough job and dangerous job. But, you know, by and large, they do a pretty good job. They have invested a lot of money. Will there be blackouts? You know, you lose power in Staten Island and out of Queens, some places in the northern part of the Bronx where the power lines are above ground. Whenever there's a thunderstorm, trees come down, knock out the lines. That's easy to repair because you just walk along, you see where the problem is, you fix it. It's underground in the more populous parts of the city, where it's harder to get to the cables, and their cables are encased so that the heat keeps building up. And if we all, you know, only use electricity when we need it, we'll probably get through this fine. The good news is we use less electricity on Friday afternoons and Saturdays and Sundays, so we probably we'll get through. Now, watch. We're going to have a power outage. You're going to say, the mayor said.
It was the mayor's fault.
Yeah, thanks. But
whatever. World Trade Center. Merrill Lynch bails on Silverstein.
Not surprising. Yeah, I don't think I've ever had a conversation with Merrill Lynch about their real estate needs. I think I've made an agreement with a conflict of interest board. You know, they used to own a piece of my company, which we just bought back. But the bottom line is I'm glad Merrill's staying downtown. They have had clearly big economic problems within the company. going and building a big new building is probably something they just can't afford, or it's not prudent when you've got all of this, these cutbacks and capital problems. So it's not the least bit surprising. Having said that, you know, Silverstein's going to build three new buildings in one of the great places to live and work. Downtown's become a real residential community. It has always been a great business community because of all the subway lines going through it and the views. People, you know, can, it's easy to get in from
New Jersey. So you're not concerned that the sign-up rate is near zero other than the government?
Yeah, I'm concerned, but make no mistake about it. There is a downturn in the real estate business and in the economy in this country. We're doing better than the rest of the country, but it's going to get to us. It's starting to get to us. I've been preaching not doom and gloom, but prudence. I've tried to, you know, cut back make every agency not cut back the services, but do them more efficiently to the extent that's possible. And we're going to have to do that more. Next year's deficit, as you know, I've been screaming, is projected to be very big. And people say those deficits don't arrive. It's interesting. I've looked in the past. The government, my administration, previous administrations have always been pretty good at projecting expenses. Because if you think about it, most expenses are long-term. We sign up for, we have debt service, labor contracts, supplies, those kinds of things. What the variable has always been is in revenues. And the city uses outside revenue sources to, I don't know how the state does it, whether they just decide on their own. But we use outside sources so nobody can think we're monkeying around.
Federal government just decides what they want.
Because they just print money. You can criticize their fiscal policy, but it's a different game, a whole different process. We use outside sources, and we average them. And, you know, just predicting the future for that is very difficult. We've gone in the last half a dozen years through a very big expansion in this economy, and the estimates have been wrong to the low side. In other words, revenues have been greater than what we expected. I don't think anybody thinks that's what's happening now. It certainly looks like the economy is slowing down worldwide, throughout the country, here, and the only question is how much. And
what does that mean to the listener, to the resident of New York City, and this really expands out to the entire tri-state area?
Look, we all worry about paying the bills and keeping our job and making sure the streets are safe and our kids go to school and those kinds of things, and it's just a good time to probably be a touch more conservative. Now, when you listen to that kind of advice, you say, oh, well, if everybody's more conservative, that slows down the economy. So, you know, you hope on a macro level people spend, but if you look me in the eye and say, what should you do, I would say, John, you know, look, in your business, advertising is very tough for radio, television, newspapers. That means less money coming into your employer, and that's not good for the people at work in whatever business you're talking about. At $4 a gallon or plus for gasoline, you might want to take your vacations a little bit closer to home. I can tell you what it makes. There's some things that you can do that aren't very painful. Turn off that air conditioner we talked about when you're not in the room. Use compact fluorescent light bulbs. I mean, you can reduce your energy costs. Don't leave the car idling when you're just sitting there. Turn the motor off. If you don't have your
air conditioner. Don't you think people do that? I mean, now that things cost, things are painful?
Capitalism works. And my daughter's father-in-law runs Hertz, the rental company. He's a very smart guy, and it's a very good company. And he tells me that the demand for hybrids, people want to lease hybrids, is more than they can accommodate. They can't get enough of the hybrids.
You found that with the taxi cabs.
And the taxi cabs, right. We had an event the other day announced we've made sure there are enough hybrids for the taxi drivers. But, you know, that works. This riding on the subways is up 5%. Traffic going through the tolls on the Triborough is down a few percent. So, you know, it does work. It doesn't work instantly. It doesn't work for everybody. But people are a little more concerned. I was talking to two of the detectives in the police department this morning, and both say in their neighborhoods, a lot of for sale signs. They have friends who have sold their houses. They have friends who have defaulted on their mortgages. Anybody that thinks it's not going to hit us is wrong. We may be better positioned. I hope we are. But it's a good time to be a little bit conservative. And I wouldn't go out and, you know, make a big bet. Having said that, you know, the stock market isn't going to zero. maybe, you know, if you buy a little bit of and make a little investment every month over a long period of time, you'll probably do pretty well. I don't know. They don't ring a bell at the bottom, somebody said to tell you.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight. We're going to make a buck or two for a couple of minutes here. We'll be right back. And if you'd like to get online, ask the mayor some questions. We'll open up some time at the... It's a Friday in New York City, and that means on this particular radio station, News Talk Radio 710 WOR, time for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, an hour together.
You know, I was just looking in the paper while you were...
raising some money for the company.
Raising some money for the company so that they can pay your exorbitant salary.
Absolutely.
And right. Do all that and keep us, pay for your electric bill to get this signal out so you and I can have a nice, fun Friday morning. And there's a story in the Sun. Tax revenues from New York businesses plummet $453 million below projections for the state. I mean, you know, all of these taxes.
Just to what you were saying.
Starting to, you'll see it. It takes a while for the economy to turn down and people to stop spending and lose their jobs before you see it in the tax revenues. And unfortunately, some of the elected officials never want to give the bad news. They wait so long that the news is worse. And, you know, during the budget negotiations with the city council, a handful of people who said, oh, this is ridiculous. We're not, nothing's going to turn down. You know, wait, let's wait and see. Well, you know, in your personal finances, it's time to save a little bit money during good times and not spend everything. And that'll get you through the bad times, hopefully. Sometimes it's worse than that's possible, but generally it'll help. But when it comes to government, that's
they never
the
part, do it.
They never do it because they are afraid to give the bad news. And they say, well, down the road, maybe number one, maybe the bad news will never arrive, possible. And number two, maybe I won't be in office. I can blame somebody else. And number three, nobody's going to remember that I was on the wrong side of this. This time, I'm going to remind people.
But that puts us in the... We talk about this constantly on this program. That puts all of us behind such an eight ball that we never sort of get a handle on everything. The snowball just continues to roll down the hill and get bigger
well,
and bigger. Well,
I don't know that that's true. I think it is true in some governments. I hope it's not true in this administration. Remember, we did prepay a lot of interest for 09. That's how we got through 09, 10, even some in 11. We have put $2.5 billion into a fund to fund to start to fund our pension our health care liabilities down the road. We a year ago asked each agency to save, I think it was 2.5%. And then
that's your administration,
year,
but the state. I mean, I know it's
I don't
not
work
your problem.
For the state.
I know it's
I don't
not
work
your
for
problem.
The state.
I know you don't.
And
work
I'm
for
trying
the
to
state.
Walk away from it. They've got their problems, and in all fairness, you know, I was in Washington yesterday, and I met with a whole bunch of senators who had invited me to a lunch. In this case, they were all Democrats, but they're Republicans. They get together as well, and I get a chance, I hope, to sit
Did
down
you
with
speak,
them as well.
I mean, before
well, they
or?
Asked me of my views on a variety of things. Why has New York been successful, and what did I think they should be doing, and that sort of thing. And, you know, they have different politics at the federal level than we have at the state level or that we have at the city level. In the city, you know, city council is very well run. Christine Quinn, she's got a number of members who really are responsive. It's easy. She has a handful who are very irresponsible too. Some who seek higher office and, you know, they just say anything that they think is politically popular. And either they're duplicitous or maybe they're just not smart enough to understand it. I don't know. But most of the city council are pretty good people. And they've helped with the administration. We don't do it without them. You know, for the last 6.5 years, things have been good. And before then, you know, if you look back and when the economic downturn took place, 9/11, there was a big spike down, but it came back relatively quickly. The real problems in the city economically started with the end of the internet bubble. That was in sort of the middle of 2000, not September 11th of 2001. And, you know, Rudy had guided the city through. Crime was coming down. That was a very big help. Welfare rolls came down under his administration. And then the internet bubble came and the city's tax revenues collapsed. Our expenses never go down because of the long-term contracts
sure.
I talked about. And also, remember, the city are, and really most governments, are in the business of helping people, and the help that they need is greater when things turn down. So whenever your revenues are going down, your expenses are going to go up, and that's why you have to save in advance for that. And we've, you know, then we worked our ways through it. We had $5, $6 billion deficits. 1 year we raised taxes, 18% 1 year. We got the state to take over our Big Mac financing. That helped us $2.7 billion. 1 year, the first year, we borrowed some money to pay expenses, which is terrible fiscal policy. But it was a program that was passed right after 9/11. Rudy used up some of it, and we used the balance of it to get us through what was arguably hopefully once in a lifetime calamity that you just had to do something special. And now we're back to revenues falling and expenses continuing to go up. And it would have been a lot worse if we hadn't economized. If we'd economized more, it wouldn't be as bad. You can always, you have to find that balance, because you don't want to cut back so much that you're driving people out of the city. On the other hand, you want to make sure that you don't have a big deficit, which will drive people out of the city.
All right. Earlier this week, you talked about poverty in the city of New York, and I think the numbers worked out to technically 1 in 4, 25% of the city. That seems awful.
Poverty
high.
Is a definitional thing. What we really try to, everybody talks about the number of poor. What we're trying to do is to at least get a set of numbers which tell you who has problems. And if you don't have the numbers, then you can't decide how many people you want to call poor. You can't decide how many people you want to help. You can't decide whether the money you're putting in is worthwhile. And so what we tried to do, and it was a lot of work, and I think you're going to see lots of cities copy it. We took a look at what the families at the lower end of the economic ladder need today versus in the past. Poverty measures were created, ones that are common, I think, created in the
60s. You're not just talking dollars here, are you?
It's what goes in and what goes out. For example, in the olden days, 1960s, it was fundamentally just based on food. Food today is a much smaller percentage of even the poor family's expenses. Food is relative to the other things, not as expensive. But you have child care if you want people to work. You have health care, which is a much bigger expense for poor and wealthy and everybody between today. Those things were never counted. On the other hand, we also never counted in the poverty measures all of the things that the public reached into their pocket to help people with. Food stamps, it clearly reduces poverty. It's income. People get that income. That should go on their income side. Section 8 vouchers should go on their income side. There's this temporary TANF, temporary needs, family needs. That should go on the income side. There's the earned income tax credit. I think it's true the bottom 50% of the people in the country have a negative tax rate because of the earned income tax mm-hmm. credit. So, you know, those things on the one side and the other side were not in the formula. Now, some of the conservatives don't want one in and do want the other. Some of the liberals want the other and not that. But the first question is come up with something that's reasonable that reflects the real cash flows for people. Then you can say, all right, at what point do we decide we want to help people? That's where you call people below that poor, above that not poor, and whatever the number then is, it is.
The number that I saw was around 27,000.
It was slightly high. It was slightly higher than 21 to 23% or whatever. But that's just a definitional thing that we can argue about. We can decide as a society who we want to help. But unless you have real numbers, you can't do it. And that's the trouble with science. It's inconvenient. Sometimes the answers, but the way science works is you decide what's a rational basis to measure and then work with the numbers that it gives you.
All right. Now, how are you going to work with those numbers?
Oh, well,
what does it mean to the city?
That's for the city. That's for the state. That's for the federal government. That's for the next 20 years. That's for a lot of things. I mean, nothing overnight changes. The programs that people qualify for, nobody's going to rush to change necessarily the criteria. And in fact, if you take a look at what's happened to a lot of the criteria for these programs, it's interesting. Some of the programs that start out for the poor gradually evolve into being programs for the middle class. And the biggest example is affordable housing. The way you calculate who qualifies for affordable housing, and there's a number of different programs, you take the average family income for the area, and then you say if you have an income of, let's say, 25% or less of the average, you qualify. And there were a bunch of programs. That's where it started. Today, there are some programs, if you have 200% of the average family income or less, you qualify. And you can see what's happened. And why does it happen? Because everybody wants to be able to take advantage of programs. Everybody says, well, I may be middle class, but I'm having trouble making ends meet. And that's
should
right.
Those percentages drop?
That's up for society. I don't take a position. That's the kind of debate we should have, as opposed to the debate on what is happening out there. That reality should be measured by science independently. You don't ever want to tell the formula what number it should give you when you do the calculation. You have to deal with a number. And some programs, I think,
that's antithetical to government thinking, though.
Well, that may be. But look, some programs work, some don't. We're trying some new things. That conditional cash transfer thing. I don't know if it's going to work, but I have hopes. And why not try new
things? Any indications yet on that?
Yeah, some things are good, but you can't judge it. It's like you saying, I want to have that right design down at the World Trade Center. I want to have a design that 10 decades from now, they're going to say, boy, those people really did it right. And take your time and do it right. And then the next day, of course, you call up and scream, where's the results?
Okay. Man brought Michael Bloomberg. We've made it to the half hour. In fact, a little bit past 8:32 here at News Talk Radio 7. And if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show, 1-800-321-0710. Joe Bartlett mentioned it in his news, Mr. Mayor, about tomorrow being the day that the restaurants start to get fined if they don't have their calorie count.
I think most will comply. A lot have done it already. And I think what you will see is people, I hope, paying attention. But the stores, they'll still buy something. And so, you know, these chains may change their menu a little bit to sell less fattening things, which is good. And hopefully they can, you know, they'll make the same amount of money. There was a story I saw out about obesity in this country. Colorado was the least obese state. And Mississippi, I think, was the most obese state. But, you know, something like 1 in 3 adults in this country are either overweight or obese. You and I do not have that problem.
Fortunately so.
Fortunately.
That's because we work out as much as we do.
2 or 3 hours a day. It's always a struggle. I always like these young people. They just keep eating everything, and they say, oh, no, you never have to worry about it. Yeah, wait till you get to be our
exactly.
age.
Exactly. So I had your friend Randy Weingarten on the line here this week. We were talking about her being voted in as the head
you
of the president.
You congratulate
her. I did indeed, of course, as the head of the American Federation of Teachers. She's going to be doing both jobs, UFT and AFT. One of the questions I asked her was about the mayoral control of the city, which will sunset at the end of next year, and was she for continuing it or for letting it go? She danced.
I'd be shocked.
I'm
sure she
said, I'm going to leave it up to the union.
You probably had the wrong person on. She would always give an explicit answer to a question.
You think
like
so?
That. Absolutely.
It is, of course, not only a concern from a practical point of view of the, you know, the future of the schools, it's a political one as well.
Well, it would be a disaster if we rolled back the changes, and I think it's fair to say that most of the changes that have dramatically made us the poster child for how to improve a school system, most of the changes that Joel Klein instituted would never have been done if you had political involvement. And I suspect that the battle will be, well, you know, the teachers should be involved, which would put the union right back in running the school system. Keep in mind, Randy actually is a reasonably progressive labor leader, and we've negotiated some great contracts with her. I have nothing but good things to say about the results. It's, you know, yelling and screaming and fighting, and that's what it's supposed to be. But a union's job is to represent its members. Her job is to get the best working conditions for the most pay and the least investment in hours for her members. That's what a union is formed for. It is not to run the school system. It is not to decide what's in the best interest of the kids. It's not that they're against what's in the best interest of the kids, but that's just not the job. The job of the chancellor is to decide what's in the best interest of the kids, and that's the division of responsibility.
Employees do not run companies.
Well, they did in Russia, and it didn't work very well, and they have been doing it in the school systems across this country, and they haven't worked very well. I was down in Washington testifying before a House committee yesterday on education, and Michelle Rhee from new chancellor in Washington, D.C., there's the head of the school system in Atlanta and the executive of the school system in Chicago all testifying. And the guy from Chicago pointed out, you know, in every other area of the city, you have accountability. And when they don't need the things, they redirect the resources. And education, we've not done that. Unfortunately, there are a handful of cities in this country, in Atlanta and in Chicago and in Washington, D.C. Adrian Fenty really has reached out to try to make a difference in a terrible school system. And here, where we have made differences, we have performance pay. We have less seniority, more focus on competency. We've become a poster child, so people want to come from around the country. We have 50,000 applicants for jobs in the city each year now. When I came into office, we couldn't fill the slots of people who were leaving, and a lot fewer people quit today. But what you've got to watch out for is there will be saying, well, you know, we shouldn't leave one person in charge. The mayor shouldn't be controller, the chancellor shouldn't have the authority to make the decisions. That's not democracy. That is democracy. You elect the mayor, and then you should have somebody that can make decisions. Should he or she consult? Yes. But in the end, if you try to run it as a commune, you get the Soviet Union. I mean, this is not rocket scientist stuff. We know what to do. And what the people scream about is an elected official would have a tough time in this day and age getting your kid into a different school in return for a campaign donation. That's the way it used to work. An elected official would have a tough time forcing the Department of Education to send more money to your kid's school as opposed to a school that had more minorities where they were less politically powerful. That's the way it worked. The old system had lots of no-show jobs. They don't exist anymore. Is the school system perfect? No. We have 1.1 million kids, which is more than the number of people in Detroit. So every day there's a problem. But to say that we haven't made enormous progress is preposterous. And to say that you could do it, that, you know, we go back to, well, parents should be involved. Parents should be involved in the education of their children, but they shouldn't be running the schools. Parents should have a dialogue with the schools, and that's what the coordinator, the parent coordinator is for, and that really is working. In the olden days, that dialogue was through community school boards, which was just a political patronage. It was an
outrage. It didn't work. 30 years of it, and
so
it's been
the question is going to be for the state legislature, which of course always, they never do something permanently where they'd have to pass a law to stop it. They do something temporary where both houses and the governor will have to sign on to do something positively, and they're going to want to take a bite out of the apple and say, no, we want this, we want this. You know, we're either going to have it or we're not, and we're not going to compromise, and, you know, we're going to, I think... You would
Will you have input message. Into that decision process at the end of next year or in the middle of next year?
Well, I can lobby the public and lobby Albany. And, you know, my hope is that Albany will understand it was not good news for us when in the middle of the night both the Republican Senate and the Democratic Assembly and the governor, all three, got together in the middle of the budget negotiations without telling anybody, without having any hearings or any public discussion, and literally put a law in the budget that says you can't use numbers and results to see whether teachers are any good in deciding to give them lifetime employment. I might point out, as you well know, you learned recently, you don't have lifetime employment.
No,
I don't have lifetime employment. I've been fired. You've been fired. I mean, you know, we give teachers lifetime employment, but to give it to them without being able to measure whether or not they can teach is an outrage. And some of the legislators I've talked to, oh, no, we know. We'll know which ones are good, which ones are bad. What do you, I mean, this is, John, you will have a disaster in this city because business is going to say then the city's going back to where it was before. I'm not going to be around. But, you know, this is our kids. How do you explain to parents that you're turning the clock back? Today we have a graduation rate higher than ever before, math scores, English scores, that would become, teachers want to come here, the best and the brightest, and the main determinant of good education is the quality of the teachers. To turn that back would be an outrage.
It certainly would be an outrage.
And I think, incidentally, when push comes to shove, my hope is that Randy, who is really a very good labor leader, will be on the side of God on this one, because she negotiated some very good contracts during mayoral control. Her teachers that she represents got a 43% raise during the last 6.5 years. They now get paid as well as the teachers in the surrounding suburbs, which they always complained they didn't. There are more young people who want to become members of her union and join the teachers. It'd be a slap in the face to them if you didn't continue it.
All right, we'll have to wait and see. That report from her committee that she assigned to this question is supposed to be released in September. We'll see what comes from
that. Well, I don't know. I mean, whatever they say. You don't go, and that's just not the way accountability works.
Absolutely. Speaking of accountability, Administration for Child Services, a group accused of and arrested for stealing $1.5 million. Interesting that this morning in the story about this that I was reading, this group, this same organization, was nailed two times before.
And got some money from one of the member items I saw.
Member items from the city council.
We'll have to see. The investigation continues. I don't want to say anything that prejudices it. John Mattingly that runs the agency, it's an impossible job because no matter what you do, you're always going to be wrong sometimes. He is one of the best authorities on how to take care of these kids who really dealt a very bad hand. Having said that, to say that we've had the right procedures in place to make sure that monies go where they're supposed to go is ridiculous. We obviously didn't. In the end, don't blame Mattingly. Blame me. We just didn't have enough. Now, we have 300,000 employees, and I'm sure there's going to be a couple of bad ones in there. But nevertheless, it's an outrage, and we should make sure that we stop it, prosecute. If they're guilty, send them away for a long time, and put in procedures so that it doesn't happen the next time.
Speaking of areas of oversight, crane inspection and also construction sites. There's been some question about
We've added a lot to the cranes and derrick unit at the Department of Buildings. We have more inspectors of different kinds. You now can't step a crane or install it or remove it without having us there at the site, and so far that seems to be working. In the grand scheme of things, probably relatively few accidents given the number of cranes, but one is too many, particularly when they're deadly. And Department of Buildings is...
How about the question of inspectors on the take? And
once again, where were we? Why didn't we know? It shouldn't have happened. The guy comes back, says, I was there, signed the form. You don't rush out and check everything every time. You can't do that.
New Yorkers want to know, will they be able to dance at their local cabaret?
Ah.
The cabaret law and dancing at the bar.
Yeah, the reason nobody...
Why do we care?
That's exactly right. Nobody cares whether you dance or not. The problem is that if you dance, chances are you want some music to dance to, and the music you want to have it be loud, and then the neighbors say, I can't sleep, and the cops say, with a lot of loud music, there's probably more drinking and drugs, and, one thing leads to another. We're trying to find the balance between not having a nanny state, but having a, letting neighbors be able to go out on the street and not have, people intoxicated on the street, and also let them sleep at night.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got some phone callers here at 1-800-321-0710. Their chance to... We continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 8 minutes before 9 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, a couple of callers on the line here. Let's start with Bill in Jackson Heights. Morning, Bill.
Good morning. Mayor, everybody's astounded by the World Trade Center fiasco. And I just want to let you know that the number one auditor in New York State warned officials in your regime about massive corruption.
What's the question, Bill? Don't make a statement.
So the question is, should the people of your administration be held accountable if they ignored warnings by the number one auditor several years ago that this was going to happen?
Okay. Then what is going to happen? I know you're
talking about... The entire World Trade Center.
Number one, the World Trade Center is a Port Authority state project. The city is responsible for... We could take some space in it. We deal with people going in and out of the site once they get on the regular streets. But the city, unfortunately, I would love to take over the Port Authority. We have no say in any of this. So I don't know what you're talking about. Your question, if you have allegations, the state has provisions for people who think that something's going wrong. Call the state, call the governor's office. They don't have a 311 line where you could call, but that's where those things go. Whether or not there's corruption, I'd be surprised. It's a $1 trillion thing, so if you're telling me there's small things going wrong, I'm sure there are. But my experience with the Port Authority is they work hard. They are a good agency. They're very big. They are very overstretched. That's clear because this is one of the most complex construction projects, maybe the most in the whole world. And one of the reasons is there's the federal government involved. There is the state government involved, the city marginally. There are a whole bunch of state agencies. There's this agency, the Port Authority, which is neither fish nor fowl because it's half run by New York State, half run by New Jersey, so it's a separate entity. You've got to build around subway lines that continue to work. You can't build some things because you've got to build what goes under it first. You have private insurance companies involved. You've got a private developer involved. It's very problematic. What worries me most is making sure we get the World Trade Center Memorial built because we raised.
Did you have anything to do with Billy Crystal going on as a board member?
I'm chairman of the board.
That's what I mean.
And we had a board meeting the other day, and Billy was there. He's a very smart guy, very dedicated. He really cares about this.
There's no question about it.
He wants to really make a difference.
I met him a couple of times.
Yeah, good guy. He's a decent golfer, really nice guy, funny guy,
yep.
But substantive. And, we've raised $350 million, and now we've got to make sure that the Port Authority has this on the top of their list. And I will, you can rest assured, urge the port. Chris Ward, we met with in Washington yesterday, happened to be down there, so it was a good opportunity for my people to get together with him. And I've planned to have and will continue to impress on both governors that this really should be the number one priority to get it open before. I'd like to get it open before the 10th anniversary, whether that's possible or not. Some of these things are just so far beyond your control. The Deutsche Bank building fire tragedy killed two firefighters. That slowed everything down for a year. I think it's also fair that we've had three governors in New York State in a couple of years. That slows things down. The economy slowing down is not good. But the construction costs continue to go up. Steel, concrete, labor, construction costs, we are estimating downtown, the World Trade Center site, and throughout the city are going up 2.5% a month.
It's still that high. I had heard it was softening, but obviously you're closer to this.
I talked to a couple of big developers yesterday, and everybody expects it to, but so far it has not.
Wow. Okay. Let's go from complicated to maybe not so, or maybe more so. Susan in Howard Beach, what's your question for the mayor?
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
I question some of the pilot programs that we have in the city, and it may be compared to some of the conversations, a trivial one. I have a tree in front of my house, which was qualified for the pilot program through your Parks and Forestry Division, and the roots have broken up the sidewalk.
Yep.
I've got a lot of seniors.
What's the question?
The question is, I was qualified last year, ran out of time because the winter came, you can't do concrete.
Okay.
Now, never been informed.
Susan, let me say two things quickly. Number one, stay on. We'll get your address, and I'll take a look. Have somebody look into it. My advice to you, if this was the first time you'd tried to do anything, is call 311. What we used to do is plant trees that where the roots grow up, and it pushes up the sidewalk.
Not
Susan's
good idea.
Exactly right. No, and people trip and whatever, and it costs a lot to replace it. Today, we're a little bit smarter. We plant trees where the roots go down so that it doesn't do it. Having said that, it is the city's responsibility, I think, in the end. If Susan calls 311, we will normally send somebody out. If it's an emergency, like it's going to fall or kill somebody, we take it out right away. If not, we put it on the list, and it takes a long time because there's just so many of them. Susan's experiencing that. But Susan, if you stay on,
I'll put you on hold.
Okay, we will get somebody. If you've already done what's right, which is to call 311, I'll take a look at it. We'll have somebody get to you, and thank you for the call.
All right, very good. Let's move along here. Line number four, that's this one here. Is it Gunther? Good morning. You have a question for the mayor.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
You mentioned before about idling of cars. I live in Washington Heights, and on 179th Street between Broadway and Fort Washington Avenue is the end stop for city buses. Sometimes there are between five and six buses there, and most of them do idle winter or summer, and I think something could be done or should be done about that.
I will mention it to Lee Sander, who runs the MTA, but let me tell you, it thinks that the city cars do the same thing, both private cars and city-owned cars. Why the drivers want the heat in the winter or the air conditioning in the summer, or maybe they're just too lazy to turn it off, or they think they're going to be going in a couple of seconds. It is an enormous waste of energy. It's an enormous polluter of the air. And it shouldn't happen. Whether I can ever do anything about it, Gunther, I don't know. But it's fascinating. What I was thinking when Gunther started talking, the first time I was ever in New York was, I think, in April or May of 1942, and I went to right in Gunther's neighborhood, 181st and Cabrini. I had a cousin who lived up there. And my parents, you know, I was 3 months old. They came down from Boston. So the first place I ever went in New York City was Washington Heights, right around the corner from Gunther, who never said hello.
Look where you are right now. Real fast, Doug up in the Bronx, real fast for your question. We're almost out of time.
Yes, Mr. Miorio. Yes, whether it's hot or cold, I noticed that gallons of water, some people turn on the fire hydrant,
yep,
and gallons of water has been wasted. 3-4 days, you're coming, you see the hydrant still on. People just pass and do nothing about it.
I think if you call, yeah, if Doug, you call, call and told somebody.
Call 311, or if you're walking by a firehouse, mention it, just mention to the fireman there. You know, that it's dangerous because it's a waste of water, but it's dangerous because the water pressure will be low, and God forbid the fire department has to show up, and they need pressure to get water onto a fire.
The hybrid car makers must love you. I see government New York City cars are all Priuses. Everybody's driving around in the hybrids.
The hybrid manufacturers love a high price of gasoline. That's right. What's getting people. But if you take a look in Europe, all the cars are small. All the cars are fuel efficient. It's fascinating. In Europe, all they talk about is the atmosphere and global warming, and we never mention it.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we'll see you next Friday. Enjoy
Looking
your week and
it.
Your weekend.
Stay cool.
Absolutely. That's it for us this week. Monday.